It seems to be the case that many Christians who do study art at college don't consciously think through where modern art is coming from or what it's communicating, or nor do they necessarily think through whether there should be any difference between art produced by a Christian or Christian art and the art that's generally produced in our culture. Should there be a conscious awareness of what's happening in the culture and of what we are producing as Christians? One of the points that Schaefer is really making is this, that we don't have to necessarily think consciously about what we're producing in order to be shaped by the culture in which we live. He wasn't suggesting that every single modern artist has sat down and consciously thought, I am going to portray, let's say, an existentialist position in my painting. They are simply children of, if you like, the culture in which they live. They simply will not paint like Rembrandt. It's not that they necessarily consciously choose to say, I am going to paint in a totally different style, but they're living in the 20th century rather than the 17th century. However, there's more to it than that. It's not just that it's unconscious, because it is partly unconscious, that we find ourselves living in a particular stream of history and thought and civilization, so that we don't stop and reflect ourselves about many of the things that are a common part of our culture. Though I would suggest that, in fact, the Bible insists that we ought to. Paul says in Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, that in order not to be conformed to the world, the only way we can be transformed is by the renewing of our mind. And he adds in 2 Corinthians 10 that our minds can only be renewed as we very consciously take every thought captive and make it obedient to Christ and destroy every obstacle that's set up against the knowledge of God. Now, if we backtrack a minute to modern art, in fact, it isn't simply that modern artists are children of their culture. There's more to it than that. Many of them very consciously were presenting a point of view which is radically different from a Christian position. If you read the letters, for example, that Van Gogh wrote along with his paintings, they reflect very clearly where he was as a person. It's the same with Gauguin. When you see his paintings of the noble savage, he made it very clear in his writings as well what he was trying to do. That he experienced the kind of breakdown of modern culture. He tried to go back to the savage, to the primitive, because he thought he might find something more pure, more free there. But he didn't. You know, after a while, he became disenchanted. And he realized that the same fundamental problems that he faced in modern Western society existed everywhere he went in the world, that we haven't any idea who we are, where we're coming from, or where we're going to. And this is consciously expressed in his painting. It would be the same if you look at the example of John Cage that I mentioned the other day. He is very consciously expressing in his work that this is a chance universe. Now, if as Christians we're either going to study art or to seek to be artists, whether it's in the area of painting or any other area, we really do need to understand what's happening in our culture. And I think the mistake that many Christians in the arts have made is to simply look at art as if somehow art was in a totally separate category from the rest of life. Now, in fact, this is a cultural thing too, because since the Romantic period at the beginning of the end of the 18th century, the arts have been put up on a pedestal away from the normal judgments that are made of people, so that artists may do really terrible things personally, but if they are great artists, that's excused. That's part of the culture in which we live. The artist is considered to be somebody who is, if you like, a sort of prophet or a priest to society, who is outside of the normal canons of criticism. If he produces wonderful art, well, then it really doesn't matter. I remember reading a very profound article once about Sylvia Plath, the poet, who in the end committed suicide. She's one of my favorite writers, and who expresses very, very acutely the dilemma of the modern human person, of not knowing who we are and why we're alive. And in the end, she killed herself. And I remember reading a critique of her poetry once, which said, which basically was suggesting that in a way it didn't really matter that she had killed herself, because she produced such wonderful poetry in the process of agonizing about life. Now, I think that's really terrible, because the human being is completely lost in production, if you like. It would be better that she hadn't been such a great poet if she could have known what the answers were that she wrestled with and that in the end destroyed her. Now, I'm not setting the two things against each other, because hopefully if one does know what the answers are, one can still produce great poetry or great painting or whatever. Art does not have to come out of a total confusion of life, though that is again a romantic misunderstanding of art, which says that great art only arises out of the distress and conflict of the human soul. Well, you read Shakespeare, he doesn't seem to have been a person who was in great distress and conflict, you know, who's a very ordinary kind of person who then retired to a sort of middle class life after he'd written all his plays. Stress and conflict are not necessary to produce great art. But coming back to the main question, that is this: as Christians, either studying art or doing art, if you like, we do need to be aware of what is being communicated in the modern arts. We need to be aware also that the medium or the media which have been used or developed to express the message of modern art, because to express a fragmented message, fragmented forms have been created, whether in music, in poetry, in the novel. You can think of James Joyce and Ulysses, with music, with John Cage as an extreme example. In painting, it's very obvious with the breakdown of the human form, for example, a breakdown of content which can be understood immediately by the observer in painting. There has been a fragmentation of form to express the fragmentation of understanding of reality. Now, for the Christian to simply think, well, now, I'm a Christian, I'm an artist, I will simply paint in the same way, is, I would say, a serious misunderstanding. Because can we actually, because art really does express where a person's at, what they really believe, unless it's very superficial art, because all great art has wrestled with the fundamental problems of human life and the dilemmas and joys and challenges that face the human person. But unless we're just simply going to be copying the culture and copying its forms, we haven't begun to think seriously enough at all as Christians. We need to understand what's being communicated, how it's being communicated, that there is an integrity of message and form. And therefore, as a Christian, I can't simply copy either the message because I don't agree with it, or the form because that form was developed to communicate a fragmented message. So as Christians, we are required, it seems to me, in obedience to Christ, to be very much more creative. Not that I have to set out with the intention of painting Christian pictures or writing Christian music or writing a Christian novel. That's not the point. That's not what Christian art is. Christian art is art that's produced by Christians, simply, we may say, which may be good or bad art, like any other kind of art, which may have integrity. That is, in the sense that the form and the message go together. But certainly, for the Christian who is an artist, over the course of time, the things that I produce ought to express something about my view of reality. Any artist would say that their art expresses what is most precious to them, what is deep within them, that is where artistic inspiration comes from. The laying of one's soul, of one's understanding, of one's person, of one's passions on the canvas or on the musical page, on the score, or in the poem I'm writing or in the play I produce or whatever. And I think many Christians haven't thought this through at all and think that Christian art either means painting Christian subjects, you know, painting lambs and choirs and crosses in church bulletins, that's what Christian art is, and writing explicitly sacred music. And of course it may include that. It will include that. You can think of Bach, for example, who wrote a great deal of we could call technically sacred music, but he just wrote rivers of other kinds of music as well, all sorts of music. But all of it flowed out of his understanding of reality and reflects something about that. So to be Christian, it doesn't have to have a specifically Christian subject, if you like, in some narrow sense. But it really ought to be expressing who I am. That doesn't mean it will always be expressing something positive. And Schaeffer later wrote some very helpful things about this, about the major and minor themes in art. That the Christian who's realistic, let's say like the author of the book of Ecclesiastes, will sometimes produce things which seem to be primarily negative. Because we, above all people, ought to recognize the brokenness of life and the absurdity of things apart from the grace of God. And sometimes the hope that we have as believers will come through more strongly and sometimes less, though over the whole course of a life's work it ought to come through at some point. It won't come through if my Christianity is only skin deep. But if it's more than skin deep and it really shapes the way I understand everything, then it must be communicated in what I produce. So that you can think of William Cowper as an example, the hymn writer and poet. He had an incredibly miserable life. He was somebody who was subject, one might say, to manic depression his whole life. He was always afraid that he was losing his salvation all the time. He was just acutely depressed, and he spent a great deal of time in mental hospital. He was taken in by... And the hospitals in those days for mental patients were not at all pleasant. It was called Bedlam in London. Well, that's where our word Bedlam comes from. It was actually Bethlehem Hospital, which was shortened to Bedlam, and now has become a word for total chaos. But that's where he had to spend some of his time, and he was taken in by Newton, the converted slave trader who looked after him for much of his life, and those were the happier parts of his life. But he was always pretty miserable as a person, and his poetry certainly expresses that. But at the same time, he wrote some wonderful hymns, some of our favorite hymns, which express the assurance we have in Christ. There is a fountain filled with blood, for example, and you think of the words in that, and these were written by a person who was despondent most of the time. And yet he could still come out with a message of hope. Now, in the same way, any Christian who is writing or painting or doing anything else over the course of time will produce things which reflect what we really believe about reality, because Christianity is not some religious bit added to the top of my life. It's true. And therefore it affects everything. And much modern art flows out of a view which is very, very different. And we have to be aware of that. So there are two mistakes we can make. The one is to say that the Christian thing is Christian subjects in some kind of narrow sense. The other is to say, well, it doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter whether I paint or write or whatever exactly the way the culture does, because that is in a way superficial as well, because it fails to really understand where the culture is at and what has caused it to produce the kind of art and writing that it has produced, you know, which really flows out of the kind of doomed world which is expressed in existentialist philosophy. Now, much modern art expresses that in the acutest possible way. Almost all modern theatre does. You can think of plays of people like Peter Schaeffer, Edward Albee, Ionesco. They are all expressing the acute problems that the modern person faces and not having any final meaning for their life. And the Christian can't simply copy that, because that's what 20th century art is. One has to think more deeply about it. But it's certainly a difficult subject, but there are some very helpful things written by Ruckmacher about this. There's a little booklet of his called Art in the Public Today, and another one, Art Needs No Justification. And then there's a little one by Schaeffer on art and the Bible. And there's several lectures of his on tape, Art Norms for Christian Artists, and so on, which are very helpful, which has some very helpful things to say. If we're looking at art, ought we to be able to say, this is what is being communicated here, or is it simply a matter of individual response? Because this is certainly how people will speak sometimes, that it's just what you feel about the painting that matters. I would suggest that, in a way, the question itself reflects something about one of the struggles which is existing in modern art, which is not true at any other point in history. You could look at anywhere else in the past, you could say, clearly, this is what this person was trying to communicate in this music, in this painting, in this novel, in this poetry, in this play. He was clearly expressing something about the world. And it's immediately obvious to the person who looks at it, who hears it, or who reads it, that something is being expressed then. It's obviously much easier when the word, the written word, is involved. But the same issues really apply. Now, I would suggest it's really a 20th century problem that art has begun to wrestle with, that once there has been, by philosophy, the rejection of the notion that there is any objective reality out there, that all that matters really is the subjective, which is fundamentally where existentialism ends up, that it is, like Sartre says, you know, in the end, the only truth there is that I exist, and that I think. He takes Descartes' famous statement, I think, therefore I am, cogito ergo sum, and he applies it in a rather different way, because Descartes was still operating from within a biblical framework, which Sartre most certainly isn't. He applies it in a rather different way, that the existence of the individual and my response to things is all that really matters in the end. That is all there is, finally. Now, that is reflected in the modern arts when we're told that we don't have to ask what was the painter trying to communicate. It's just a matter of how we respond to things. Because under that lies the view that there is no objective reality, and even that communication between people is impossible. That each of us is an island to ourselves. To turn Shakespeare around the other way, who said no man is an island to himself. You know, in our culture, we are left with a situation where everybody is an island to themselves, and real communication from one person to another is regarded as impossible. So in poetry and the novel, language becomes fragmented to express that. Communication is really difficult. Does anybody really understand me? Or am I just trapped myself? Now, we see that in morality and everything. Morality is something which is totally relative to the individual. He is his own island of autonomy, making his own choices without regard to anything outside himself. But that is a totally new way of seeing art, of looking at art as something which is not expressing something objective, but which is just open for everybody's interpretation. Now, again, the Christian has to ask some very fundamental questions about that and say, as Christians, we believe that we are living in a universe which is created by God, and by a God who isn't silent, but who's spoken to us, and who has genuinely communicated to us in a way that we can understand and respond to, that he's told us objectively true things about the world, and beyond that, that he has created us as persons in such a way that we can understand the world that he's made, that there is a coherence between my mind and the universe that is out there, so that I can look at the trees and understand them, or the heavens, and that way science is possible, because there is a coherence between my mind and the orderly world that God has created. It isn't a chance universe. There is a real relationship, and the same between people, that all human beings are persons made in the image of God, that language is a gift of God, and there is real communication possible. Communication is sometimes difficult, but it is possible. It really is possible. So the Christian has to say that I don't accept this idea that no real communication from one person to another, whether in words or in art, is possible. The Christian can't possibly accept the position of total subjectivism, which is where some modern art ends up. because that is arising from a worldview which is completely alien to the Christian. And every time actually a play is produced, or somebody writes poetry and you buy it, or even go and look at a painting, you recognize that there really is something there. And I think you see a tension here in modern art. You've got people who really are trying to communicate something, and on the other hand saying, well, there's only subjectivism. And you see that tension there all the way through. I think you find many tensions like that in modern art. An insistence that the universe is just a chance, meaningless universe, and yet at the same time the communication of meaning and pattern and order and regularity. Or in a poet like Sylvia Plath or Ted Hughes, saying life is completely absurd, everything is horrible and ugly and just awful and absurd, and yet at the same time communicating it in beautiful words and wonderful images and glorying in the creation that's there. And you see this tremendous tension there, because on the one hand there's the complete denial of order and beauty and meaning, and it's expressed in orderly and beautiful and meaningful language. And there is a tension at the heart of it there, because human beings have been created with a longing to communicate. So as soon as one sets something down, one's actually rejected subjectivism. So I would say there is a real tension there. But I think you're right that often Christians haven't thought through the issues that are involved, because it does take some really hard work, I think, working these things through. If you look at the history of still lifes, if you look at the still lifes, for example, that came out of Holland, which are the most famous ones in the 16th and 17th century, there is absolutely no question but they arose because of a Christian worldview. That kind of art would never have been painted in India, for example, under Hinduism, because there was no value to the external world out there. Just in the same way that William Carey, when he went to India in 1798, produced the first botany of Indian plants, because there had been no attempt whatsoever before to understand and classify the plants that were there, because the external world was considered unimportant ultimately. Now, you see, worldviews have a very profound effect upon people which we're not even aware of. That's my point. Or let's take another practical example, then I'll come back to the art one. Many of the problems of famine which exist in North Africa at the present time, over the last few years, have arisen out of a particular worldview. You talk to any missionary who's worked, say, in parts of Ethiopia or the Sudan or Chad or northern Kenya, where there has been real problems of food, you have a worldview which does not see the human person as someone who is created to have any kind of dominion over his environment. You have a worldview which requires people to do things in exactly the same way they've always been done in the past. So one of the problems the missionary faces, let's say a missionary who's going to try and change agricultural practices, is that it's considered to be offensive to the spirit of one's ancestors or the spirits that inhabit the land if one does anything differently. So you're caught in a cycle of poverty. There's nothing you can do, let's say, to dig wells, to irrigate your land, to fence your crops off from the animals which maraud over your fields, or whatever, because the worldview doesn't allow for those things to happen. It may even forbid them. Now, it's not that anybody's consciously thought it through. We can't do this and we can't do that and we can't do something else any more than it was thought through in India. We can't produce botany books and study the plants here and so on. It is just a product of a way of seeing things, of a whole way of understanding reality which lies behind the conscious level of daily life. But it is there in a very profound way. Now, if you look at what Schaeffer calls in How Should We Then Live, the rivers of art that flowed out of the Reformation in Northern Europe, What he was trying to say was this, that as you look at the wonderful still lifes, for example, the wonderful landscapes which were painted in Northern Europe, particularly in Holland, in the 16th and 17th century, they arose from that worldview. It wasn't that people were consciously trying to say, because I'm a Christian, and many of the individual painters may not have been Christians, because I'm a Christian, I can paint fish and I can paint bowls of flowers and I can paint trees and I can paint peasant women and I can paint jugs of milk and bowls of fruit and everything else. It was simply a product of what is thought about reality, that this universe is made by God, that it's there to be enjoyed by the human person, that the things that God has created are good and they're beautiful. So that both an understanding of science, we may say, an understanding of art, an understanding of dominion of the world flow necessarily out of a biblical understanding. Now, when that understanding disappears in a culture, then the art begins to change, just as the morality begins to change. Everything changes, because the world is seen, without consciously seeing it that way, in a different way. So the kind of art you could produce at one moment in history, you cannot produce in another. It seems like an anachronism. It really is, in a sense. So, well, of course I wouldn't look at a bowl of flowers and say that is a Christian painting. That's not the point I'm making. But at a very deep level, the way people paint, the way people do science, the way people do agriculture, and the way people behave towards each other actually flows out of your way of seeing the world, the way you treat other people. As soon as we start talking at that kind of level, it's much more obvious. Because art is operating at, particularly painting and music, are operating at a level where you can't set it all down quite so simply as you can when you're thinking about morality or the way people change it, or the way people treat each other as human persons. But just as surely as Hinduism produced widow burning and still produces the killing of baby girls, and temple prostitution, and shunning of lepers and blind people, and just pushing them aside as totally untouchable kinds of people, just as surely as it produces that, it will also produce certain kinds of art and certain kinds of science. Now, in the same way, Christianity also has an effect upon a culture, because it changes the way people see things. Remember how Paul says, if any man is in Christ, he is a new creation. I remember somebody who became a Christian when I was at Waymo in 1967. Lynn will remember him, a fellow named Jack McNeil, a Canadian, a French Canadian. And he said, on the day he became a Christian, it was as if I saw the world for the first time, because he began to see the whole physical universe in a completely new way. It was like scales had been taken off his eyes, because he had been taught, like other modern people, that this universe is just simply a mechanism, it's just a product of time and chance. And that had had the effect for him of dulling his vision. And when he became a Christian and he acknowledged that there's a creator, he began to see the world in a completely new way. Every flower, every tree, every sunset looked completely different. It mattered now in a way that it hadn't mattered before. Think of David's sermon yesterday, where he finished up by saying the whole earth is filled already with the glory of the Lord. Now the Christian sees that. We look out of the window and even on a cold day like today, with flurries of snow blowing around, the universe is filled with the glory of God. But that's because of what we believe about God, that we automatically see creation that way. Now, if I'm not a Christian, I may not see it that way at all. I may see it very differently. So while one can't answer the question immediately and say, yes, I look at this painting and I see it's a Christian painting, I can look at the whole flow of painting, of music, of plays, of poetry, of novels, etc., produced by a culture. And over time, I can say, yes, that clearly reflects this world view. So that you get realistic art coming out of Christianity and its influence on a culture. Art which paints people as real people. And you see that happening in the 17th century. People are painted as they really are. Now you begin to actually see the world as it is, because you understand something truly about it. Now, as that Christian worldview has disappeared from our culture in terms of the way the culture is shaped, so an art which is totally different has been produced. An art which expresses subjectivism, relativism, fragmentation, lack of order, chaos, etc. And of course you can see these very dramatic examples like Edward Albee or Ionesco, or you think of some of the plays that Ionesco has written, for example, Samuel Beckett, I mentioned the other day, where there's a total breakdown of communication between people. Now that's reflecting something about a worldview. And all art does that. It isn't always easy to say it, and it can be this approach that I'm taking, or that Schaefer took here, can be ridiculed by saying, of course I can't look at that still life and say that it was painted by a Christian. Of course I can't. I'm not suggesting one can simply like that. But the whole output of an artist over their life will most certainly express who they are, what they believe, as well as the kind of culture in which they're living in. And if it doesn't, one has to say it's simply superficial art. A painter is shaped, any artist is shaped by their culture, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're shaped by a context. So as you said, the Christian painting today or writing music today will write music and paint in a way very different from a Christian who lived 100 years ago, even though they believe the same things. Now, that's a really good point. We can just think of the hymns that are produced, for example. The hymns that were produced in the 19th century, not all of them, but many of them, reflect Victorian culture. They reflect sentimentality, sweetness, and light, we may say. I don't want to be rude, but there is a lack of realism in some of that music, in some of those words. Now, we went through a patch in the 50s and 60s where much of the Christian music that was being produced was very superficial. It didn't have much biblical content or much musical depth. Now, I would say that in the last 10 years there has been a growth of really new Christian music, which most certainly fits in this culture, and it's accessible to people who live today. Non-Christians can walk into a church and hear some of that music written by somebody like Graham Kendrick, for example. They can hear that music and they respond to it immediately because it fits into this culture, into this time. It's accessible to them. Here is a person who is not speaking in a strange tongue. He's a 20th century person. He's writing music in a way which is accessible to the modern person, and that's wonderful to have Christians doing that. At the same time, it's not superficial. The words are wonderfully biblical and they express all kinds of theological truths very profoundly in a more modern idiom, most certainly, and the music is in a modern idiom. So the Christian will write in a different way. Willy or nilly, he will. And there's no point in going back to the past and saying, well, I want to paint still lifes like the Dutch painters painted in the 17th century, or I'm going to paint like Rembrandt or whatever. We have to live now. This is where God has called us to live. So I must seek, as a Christian, to express my understanding of the world, the way I see the world, within the context of this culture. And as we said the other day, the danger for the Christian is that we might simply retreat from the culture into our own subculture and develop our own forms which communicate to nobody except ourselves. We do that with a lot of Christian popular music, Christian films, and so on. They are not accessible to people outside. Now, do we say the culture is so far removed from Christianity that it's impossible to communicate with it? I don't think so. You think of two examples. You can think of Chariots of Fire and Babette's Feast, neither of which, incidentally, were produced by Christians, but both of which say something very powerful about Christianity in a very positive way. Now, it's very sad that they had to be produced by somebody who wasn't a Christian, rather than somebody who was a Christian being able to produce something with that kind of integrity, with that kind of respect for the Christian faith. But generally speaking, we have produced things only for our own subculture. And that's really sad. Because we haven't liked what's happening out there, we have tried to develop our own forms which have no relationship to what's happening out there. Or we've made the mistake, as in a lot of Christian popular music, to just simply copy the culture's forms and put Christian words to them. But that isn't good enough either. What we're called to do by God, it seems to be, is to be much more creative, to take the forms of the culture and treat them in a really creative way as we communicate a different message. Not just to simply copy them, and often we're a very poor copy. So a lot of the kids would say to you, well, I won't listen to that music, it isn't even good. Yeah, and not because of the words. Not because of the words, but because they don't think it's good enough. It doesn't have enough integrity musically. And so they dismiss it as second class. And again, that's a tremendous challenge, because we ought to be producing things which are good, which have quality, because after all, God, we know that God has created us in his image with creativity. It's not just something we happen to have by chance, it's something that God has given us. And we need to pick up the challenge, to pick up the gauntlet, to really then to then use that and take it and run with it in every one of these areas. But it will have to be something which is produced in the context of this culture. Now, one of the things we've been trying to do in apologetics is look at how Genesis, for example, or the book of Ecclesiastes, were written in their cultural context. You know, they weren't written sort of dropped out of heaven. God gave them into that moment of history in a form which was accessible to people at that time, but expressing his truth. And that's the challenge for the Christian today. You know, whether I'm preaching a sermon, or whether I'm making a film, or painting a picture, or writing music, or writing poetry, is to be sufficiently creative to take the way I see the world as a believer and express it in a form which will be accessible to people at this moment of history. Precisely because we can, we are understanding what's taking place, and we're understanding the points of tension there are in the culture, let's say between subjectivism and yet the realization, the passion that every artist has for communication. That is, after all, why he's setting it down on canvas or writing it in words, because he does have a longing to communicate. And so you then find this tension. Now, exactly at a point like that, at the point of tension which is there, or at, let's say, the fragmentation or absurdity of the world, you can think of the book of Ecclesiastes again, there, if you're picking up a point of tension in your culture, and you are able to express something very different as you do that. But it does really require some creativity. Neither copying the crowd, nor simply just baptizing something with Christian words, nor nostalgia for the past, but being creative now. Now, I'm not suggesting that art's propaganda, and if you've, so don't misunderstand me that way, that the Christian always sets out consciously to say, I've got to communicate the gospel. I don't mean that for a moment. But that we ought to be so shaped in the way we see the world by our understanding as Christians, in the way we see everything, in the way we see other people, that it will affect even unconsciously the way we do things. The way sexuality is treated by different painters. Usually by modern painters, it will be treated as something pornographic or something simply to titillate the senses. Now, you look at the way Rembrandt dealt with it. He was just as explicit. You can think of the picture where he's going to his wedding bed. He's just as explicit, but it's completely different. Christian immediately has a different way of looking at things. which then will affect everything. And sometimes it will affect everything consciously, but the more I grow as a Christian, the more it will be reflected unconsciously in the things that I produce. So that, let's see, seeing people with dignity through one's camera will not be something I have to stop and think about, but will be the way, as a Christian, I automatically respond to people, just as one hopes that kindness and gentleness will be a part of one's character, which one doesn't have to force, but which is really growing as I'm changed. So in the same way, a Christian worldview ought to be shaping unconsciously everything that we see, everything that we think, everything that we do, and the things that we produce.